So just a few facts. Between the year 1932 and 1934, the date of your entrance. And then I know when we get to the stories of your novitiate, we're going to need 5 tapes.
My brother, I had a very happy youth. And I followed all the activities at Boston College during my brother's 4 years there. And I loved the theater while I worked. I loved the theater. I belonged to the Theater of the Month Club, and you got seats at a reduced rate. And I took in many, many shows. And my youngest brother loved music. He was very talented. I took piano lessons for 6 years, and I was sitting playing the piano as the Sister William Louise was talking to a young woman who would purchase the music, and she for the us to play in the recital, and she told her, "Now for John, he's only taken a couple of lessons, but he's going to play the overture to Poet and Peasant. Now, Mary's so much older and has taken so much longer. You'll have to get a piece with a lot of cross hands so it won't show her up." Now, that was said in my presence. And my father said, "Oh, all the money I spent on you, Mary, has been worthwhile. It's come out in John." But it brought a wonderful music into our family. John played the piano and Joe played the violin. And the boys upstairs played the drums. And when we all went to religion, the street became very quiet.
Oh, I can imagine. So now, get us to the front door of the novitiate.
I had a feeling that sisters wanted postulants, and they would do anything to get a girl to enter. So I didn't visit the nuns very much. I didn't want them to rope me in, as it were. But when I really was ready to enter, I told the priest, Father Parsons. He was a great help to me. He said, "Now, Mary, call Brighton and ask for an appointment with Sister Camilla, Mother Camilla."
Oh, yeah, sure.
I called Brighton and was told there was no such person there. Well, that was a kind of a shake. I was rather shook by that. And however, it was straightened out. I guess I called back again and they told me it was Mother Domitilla, and I got an appointment. I'm on my way to Brighton to keep that appointment, and all of a sudden, I lost my cool. I'm waiting at South Huntington Avenue for the transfer car, and I said, "I don't know how you address a Reverend Mother of the community." So I tore up the transfer and came back home and rang the doorbell of St. Thomas's Convent and asked for Sister William Louise, from whom I had taken music lessons. And it was visiting day. The convent was crowded. They all had their families. And I spoke to her in the front hall, and she said, "What is it, dear?" And I said, "I just want to ask you, how do you address your Reverend Mother? I have an appointment with her, and I don't want to call her." And she was so shocked, she sat down on the step. And she took over from there.
Oh, good. And you needed that.
Yes.
Right. She took over.
She took over.
Did you go back to Brighton that day?
No, I went back later. And one problem was I was an only girl, and Mother Domitilla wanted to be sure that my mother
would be provided for.
Yes, and that approved. And of course, my mother came. She wouldn't give me an answer until I brought my mother.
Of course.
And my mother came with me. It was very difficult. I think I must mention the terrific heroic sacrifice my mother made, because the same year I entered, my youngest brother, John, who had just graduated from high school, entered.
The Jesuits
in Shadowbrook. And she lost three of us in 2 years, because Joe went in 32 and we went in 34. And that left just my mother and father and my brother Teddy. But when I was, the day I entered the novitiate, I received a corsage as I was going out the door. It was delivered, and I wore it. And when we arrived at the front door of the, it was white, all white flowers, a young, very young sister, probably a novice in a black veil, let us in. We rang the doorbell, and a very young sister, I think a novice in a black veil for the occasion, let us in. Before she even said hello or welcome, she reached to unpin the corsage from my dress.
Oh, dear.
And I was horrified. I put my hand up and I said, "Sister, that's mine." "Oh, don't you want to give it to the Blessed Sacrament?" And I looked at her and I said, "No, sister, I'm giving that to my mother to wear home."
Wow. Well,
that was my first encounter. But when I saw Sister Winifred, there was no comment at all.
Oh, very good. I want to stop for a minute and ask you, you mentioned that you were told to call Brighton and ask Mother Camilla. Was any explanation given to you at any time why that was the direction you were given?
There wasn't.
There was no explanation, because you learned later, of course.
As novices, and we want to tell that, we were all praying.
That's right,
and
yes.
We thought the community was going to be disbanded.
Exactly, it was a very difficult
that
time.
That Saturday when they all went to chapter.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I don't think I made that connection.
You didn't, no. But at that time, of course, you knew that Mother Camilla had been appointed by Monsignor Splaine and McCardinal, and the community refused to take that kind of appointment.
Yes.
But I didn't realize that her name was given that early to anybody.
This was probably just when it had come out. It must have been maybe Father Parsons was in with
truly
Splaine. I don't know.
That's right, surely.
Or if the priest had it, you know?
Right.
And it probably had just happened. And the congregation was acting on it.
That's right. And they wouldn't understand the internal upset that was created in the community
at that time.
Yeah. No. Well, let's get back. You're into the novitiate already, and you gave your corsage to your mother, and now you are a genuine postulant.
A genuine postulant.
At St. Joseph Novitiate Framingham.
It was a very, very difficult decision for me. I must be honest. I found it most difficult. I did it because God wanted me to, period.
That's wonderful to be able to say.
I'm firmly convinced that vocation is not the same as choosing a profession. It's entirely in the Lord's hands.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, our classes with Sister Alexis were wonderful. They were a consolation. I had somewhere, probably in my work in the hospital in Boston, picked up an affectation of blinking my eyes. I don't know where I picked it up, but I was unconscious of it. And Sister Teresa Magdalene, every time you went to her for permissions, she would tell you your faults, and it was always my eyes. Oh, those eyes! That you're behaving like an actress, and so. One day I went and asked to make my bed and do my charge, And she said it again, and I said, Sister Teresa Magdalene, you're trying very hard to make me say I will go home. I said, I will not say it. You can't make me say I will go home. And she was, she left me immediately, and I think
it was more than she could take.
It was. And that was the last time I think she spoke about my eyes.
Good. You told me another incident when you were a partial, and I want you to repeat it. Yes.
The first time I got breakfast as a postulant, it was just really the two novices wouldn't let me do anything, just watch so that I would learn. And that day or evening, perhaps three sisters had died. And in those days, you the undertaker embalmed them in Bethany.
Nice.
And they had been there most of the night, and we got word we were to serve their breakfast. Well, Sister Mary Luke came in the morning and was very pleased because all went so well and they liked their breakfast. And she gave all the credit to the poor little postulant and looked at me and said, you must be so tired. Go in there and have a cup of coffee. And Sister pointed to an inner room off her big kitchen where I had never been. I stepped inside and saw a dining room, and there was one empty place, and there were five men at the table. So I sat down with them, and Eli, a handsome young man at that time, sat opposite me. They were all talking and laughing, and they suddenly offered silence when they...
Presence of a pastor.
And Eli served me coffee and bread and butter, and while later, Sister Mary Luke came in, and she let out an exclamation and literally ran back into the dining room to see if there were any professed left in the dining room. And she brought back five or six and stood them in the doorway, and I heard her say, look now, this is the type they're taking in today. Novitiate was difficult in many ways.
I guess it's intended to be,
but
used to be intended.
Well, we probably profited. It didn't, I don't know, I have reservations. My mother came to see me in August, and she had been at Shadowbrook and visited my youngest brother, John, and she said, Mary, I had a wonderful visit with John, and I know he's very, very happy. Now, I must find out the truth from you. Are you really happy here? And I looked at him and I said, yes, I really am happy in religion. Because, you know, I must tell you that if you're not happy, you must come home. You don't stay in religion if you're not happy there. And we want you. We will welcome you home with open arms. Now, she said about Joe, he writes that he's happy, but a letter, you can't tell by a letter. I want to see him and know myself. And I said to my mother, you must be planning to cash in your checks. Well, no, she said, it's just something I have to know. Within 2 weeks, my mother had died.
Imagine.
And my oldest brother, who was then studying philosophy in Spokane, when they heard of her condition, they sent him home. He was with her every day for more than a week.
What a consolation her and for him.
And for him.
Yes.
That was extraordinary.
Yes.
And it was a ruptured appendix, and peritonitis had set in, but it all cleared up. And the day she died was the day the old Dr. Stanton was coming to remove the stitches.
Oh.
At the time, his family had polio very bad.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
I didn't know until later that the sisters, my mother had said to the sisters who were patients in the next room, our sisters,
yes,
that if she died, she did not want me to come home to take care of my father and my brother.
Oh.
I didn't know that till Mother Simplicia told me that herself. They had told her.
Isn't that amazing?
And my father was very sick.
very sick, and I found it very difficult after my mother's death. And the following year, my brother Teddy died very suddenly. The day of the sale at Brighton, Mother Simplicia came over to me and said, "You go home. Your father is very sick. The sisters at St. Thomas's are waiting for you." And it was that my brother Teddy had died.
Oh.
Died very suddenly of pneumonia.
And your poor dad now all
that
alone.
That was agony. That really was agony.
Mm-hmm.
And Sister John Joseph, God bless her, called Mother Simplicia. And I was then a novice. I hadn't even made first vows, but I was at Regis. Told her how that I should be visiting him, and asked if she couldn't send me down to the convent on weekends to go up to him.
Wonderful.
I thought it was thanks be to God. Well, I got one weekend,
Thanksgiving
weekend. I did. But he rallied. Those were very hard times.
Yeah.
And I knew the fact that my mother's last wish helped me to remain.
Mm-hmm.
And something my father said to me, one of the priests had said to him that I should come home
right.
and take care of him. And as my father was telling it, my father was horrified that a priest would ever
make that suggestion,
suggest such a thing.
Mm.
So that I knew that it wouldn't help my father if I did it.
No.
But he had a housekeeper, and then when she had a shock, the housekeeper came after my mother died, took care of both of them. Then when she had a shock, his niece came in and took care of him, and then later, and 6 years later, he married again.
Oh,
and
wonderful!
He was well cared for.
Oh, wasn't that an answer to prayer
for
you?
It was. The Lord did take care of him very well.
Very good.
You
mentioned that although you hadn't made first vows, you were sent to Regis. When did you go to Regis?
The day my mother died. Sister Winifred said to me, "Sister, your mother has gone to God, and we are sending you to Regis."
And all in the same breath.
All in the same breath. I think she was an effort to give me. And then when I went to Regis and saw the beauty of the place, it broke my heart that I couldn't show it all to my mother.
I know it. No one to tell.
It was really terrible.
Yeah. Now, what work were you given at Regis?
At Regis, I was sent there as a student to register.
I see.
And get my degree.
Right.
And I was only there 2 or 3 days when Mother Simplicia came and sent for me, and she said, "Sister Joan Patricia has to have an assistant in the library, so we can't spare you to study. You will work in the library with her."
How did you feel about that?
The Lord cushioned a lot. The Lord cushioned many of these things for me,
right,
really.
Yeah.
And I strangely got a marvelous education at that desk in the Regis Library.
I'm sure you did.
All the faculty would come and put books on reserve and explain their assignments to me, even tell me what they hoped the students would get from it. I got the most wonderful education in the humanities.
Apprenticeship.
Just listening to those
that
faculty,
right.
really, and seeing the books that you, and
yeah.
working with the books.
Right.
And
when did you study and get your degree?
I was there quite a while before I took any
courses at all.
And I remember Sister Mania.
Oh,
I took
yes.
her course with the freshmen in World History. And then, I did take every library science course that Joan Patricia taught.
Oh, great.
Every library science course,
mm-hmm.
but nothing else.
I see.
And then after a while, I had the wonderful good fortune to take my French. I took 2 years of French from Sister St. Francis.
Oh, how lucky.
She tutored me. All in French, no English spoken.
Beautiful.
But it was marvelous.
Sure.
And my first course, with the sisters was Sister Carmeline's Chaucer.
Which was unusual.
So
I took that with her too.
It was wonderful. Yeah. And I was ready for all these things.
Oh, of course.
By imbibing what I did, you know.
Surely. Yeah.
And so I was there for nine years.
Did you have your degree by the time you left?
No. I left there in 1944.
Uh-huh.
I got my degree, I think, in 1947.
I see.
I went Saturdays,
sure,
and
as we all did,
as you all did, mm-hmm, and summers,
right.
And it was interesting. In 1947, word came. Well, no, it was 1949, I think. Shortly after I got my degree, 1948 mm-hmm, or 1949, a letter went out that they were looking for a librarian. At that time, I left Regis in 1944. I was sent to Arlington to teach at St. Agnes.
Right.
And those were five wonderful years. I loved the children and I enjoyed.
Community life there was beautiful.
Oh, it was. And the families there were wonderful,
yes,
too.
Yeah.
And they had, I was there with the wonderful Monsignor.
I should know too.
Wasn't Flaherty? Was it Flaherty?
I think it was.
Was it Flaherty?
I think it was Flaherty.
A real schoolman.
Yes.
And he had these extraordinary friends that we would sometimes they bring over sometime. And Mother Mary Joseph came.
Oh, of Maryknoll.
Of Maryknoll, because her assistant came from Arlington.
Is that so?
And she would spend the weekend with us, and she gave us her story of the founding of Maryknoll. That was wonderful, wonderful,
you
really.
Had so many wonderful experiences.
It really was.
Very so you exact. Were 5 years in Arlington.
I
and
was
then?
5 years in Arlington. I also had my oldest brother was a great friend of Martin Cyril Darcy, Father Darcy,
oh,
the
yes,
historian,
yeah.
And he came at to Regis and spoke, and he asked for me.
How nice!
I was quite thrilled.
Sure.
I began in the fourth grade, and then I went to the eighth,
mm-hmm,
and I taught in the eighth grade in Arlington for 4 years. While I was there, this letter came out asking for somebody who would be willing to volunteer to study library science because they needed a librarian.
Uh-huh.
And my reasoning was I did it for money before I entered.
Sure.
I should at least be willing to do it
for the Lord.
And so I signed up, and Sister Genevieve Marie sent for me, and she said, I want you to know that if you do sign up for this, your work will be in the novitiate, in the library at the novitiate, where you want that.
Oh, she was
now,
fair enough. To
I
tell
think
you.
Yes, I thought so.
Mm.
And I said yes.
Okay. Because so, at that time we were establishing the College of St. Joseph. We had got a charter from the state.
Yes.
And we were quite proud of it.
And that was so. The following year, while I was still studying at Simmons, I was transferred to the College of St. Joseph.
Oh, very good.
So I continued from there to go to Simmons summers and get my degree.
Wonderful. Did you get a master's now in library science?
A master's in library science.
You already had your AB.
Yeah.
Fine.
And that was a wonderful experience because it was government scholarships to veterans of the Korean War.
Oh.
And they were all... Most of the people who studied were men.
Oh, and eager to get an education.
And it was a very interesting class.
Mm-hmm.
I had one teacher. I met prejudice in my both in
Did you
in
really?
My library work. I met it. I met it from one person in the Jamaica Plain Library, who just. Because I was a Catholic.
Oh.
I met it in Simmons from one, not from the
students.
not from the students and not from the dean. Actually, the dean, when I did my thesis, he said, "Sister, I want you to do something. I'm interested in how you people do things, because there's something you can write about." And so at the time, the Catholic Book of the Month Club was 25 years old.
Oh.
And I said I would do a history of it.
Great.
And I did. And I did a history of it. It began with laymen who did an extraordinary job starting it and gave their own funds.
Who were some of them? Rashid?
No, these were Americans.
These were
Americans, and one of them became a Dominican, and he was in the priory in Rhode Island.
Oh.
And I wrote to him. I think I'm going to put this on tape for
good
history. These men had wanted to make Catholics read
Catholic literature.
But they wanted Catholic literature to be uplifting.
Yes.
To be the equal of, say, a non-Catholic.
Of the classic.
And it should be classic.
Surely.
And so that's why they started this library. And it was an extraordinary story of dedication to culture, Catholic culture, I thought. When I wrote that whole paper, the director of the library, we had to face the faculty on it, and he told me it's required reading of all his faculty. Because in it, I showed all the prizes, not just Catholic prizes, but literary awards these selections had
really?
Won.
Yeah.
At the time, America, at the time, America, now after 25 years, and I brought that out, America now had taken over this when they
club
mm-hmm. maybe because they couldn't handle it, the men, mm-hmm. financially. And I wrote to the editor, I won't name him, and sent my, they wanted me at Sims to have it published.
Yeah.
And he kept it for months. So finally I wrote and asked him, could I have it back?
Mm-hmm. Was this a Catholic publishing company?
Yes, it was America.
Oh.
And he finally sent it back and told me he was quoting, and if I would give him permission, he was writing a history of the Catholic Book of the Month Club.
Oh, he didn't want you to get ahead of him.
But he wrote it as if America started it.
Oh.
And gave absolutely no credit to these marvelous men who had it all set up when America
took it over.
Mm-hmm. And that is what he didn't want, he didn't want published. And I, at the time, didn't care to make a issue of it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But
that should be
but those
written
things
up today.
My things are not what they seem.
And politics exists
so often,
everywhere.
Things are not what they seem.
That's right, mm. Yeah.
But
you worked at the College of St. Joseph.
I worked at the College
the
of
library.
St. Joseph. I set up the library. It was very exciting to work with those novices.
Is that right?
It was really wonderful. And Sister, what was her name?
Well, anyway.
The dean there at the time, it begins with the
Evelyn,
wanted me to teach courses. For the girls who came with a college degree, I taught literature of the humanities.
Beautiful.
Which meant they read some of the great classics, and War and Peace, and
right.
Dante's Inferno,
right.
And Hamlet, and we had, I was wonderful, we would discuss them. For some of them, they took children's literature because they had all the other courses that
mm-hmm.
were offered. And they worked in the library and helped me.
Great.
And they were tremendous.
I'm sure.
It was a very exciting
How many years
it was
did that
broken.
Go?
I went in 49 and I left there in 61. But all in between, whenever, as the Reverend Mother explained to me, when they needed a teacher,
They sent for you.
They sent for me because I was not working for a pastor, and he would not who could object.
Right.
So they sent me for 3 months to Sacred Heart Newton to fill in for somebody. They sent me to Watertown for 2 years. They sent me to Georgia. While I was there, they sent me to Georgia.
Oh, you didn't volunteer for Georgia?
No. The day before the transfers came in August, Sister Philippa and I were told we had to go to see the Reverend Mother in Brighton. When I went there, she said, "How would you like to be a missionary? We are sending you to Georgia."
How would you like?
We asked, but in the same breath. And that's how I went to Georgia.
Oh, very interesting.
The history has changed things. In those days, they needed sisters very much in Georgia and had to hire lay teachers.
And they were Sisters of St. Joseph, were they not?
They were on Carondelet. They, the bishop there told the Mother Superior if she had any more lay teachers in her school, they would have to leave the diocese.
Oh, mm-hmm.
And so she traveled the whole East Coast visiting every St. Joseph order, begging for the loan of two sisters for 2 years.
So who went with you?
Sister Philippa.
Oh.
When we went there, it was real segregation. This was for the Catholic, white.
White.
Well, oh. And non-Catholic. I had 11 oh. or 12 non-Catholics in my own class.
Mm-hmm.
It was all white, and Camp Gordon families sent their children there.
Say,
the school system, public school system, was not good at all. So many,
what level were you teaching?
I taught the fourth grade. What was it?
Elementary
level,
anyway.
I think it was the sixth grade.
Mm-hmm.